Okay, so welcome to Let's Talk Property podcast for everyone that's listening. I'm Sophie and you are also joined by...
Rory.
Excellent. Today we are talking about one of the biggest shakeups in the rental market that we've seen certainly in our lifetime, the Renters' Rights Bill that is most likely going to be coming in around the summer, although that is to be confirmed. We are going to be focusing on just a few of the bills that are going to be coming in because there's a lot. And we think we're just kind of focusing on the ones that we think are probably the most dramatic and the one that will impact how best you need to manage your property, find tenants, et cetera, et cetera. And those ones that we're focusing on is the end of fixed term tenancies, the abolition of Section 21.
Abolishment.
The abolishment of Section 21, changes to landlord grounds for possession, and also effectively the rent controls that are coming in, which is about how you market your property and not allowing to have any bidding wars, and also rent reviews. This is going to be interesting. We're going to keep it really short and as focused as we can. And what we really want to focus on is action. So how best you can manage these coming in for the future and how you can really kind of protect your asset whilst also ensuring that, of course, tenants' rights are always adhered to at all points. I also need to put a little bit of a terms and conditions note in there because none of this is confirmed. It still needs to go to the House of Lords. There still need to be several readings and it still needs to go through officially. So something we discussed today may well change. So please make sure that if and when you're listening to this, that you are double checking if the bill has gone through, if anything has changed. Okay, so Rory,
We're now protected.
We're now protected, exactly.
We now give our opinions.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so I think what we'll start with, Rory, is the end of fixed term tenancies. Do you want to give a little bit of an overview as to what we currently have set up, how it works, and effectively what will be coming in, which is a two-month, a rolling contract, effectively. So over to you, ASTs, and what we've currently got set up, okay, and what will be changing.
Current setup everybody has in the UK, or sorry, in England, is a fixed-term tenancy. So that'll be 12 months with a six-month break clause, 18 months, 24 months, generally speaking. What is going to change is when everybody... and each year you would either sign a new tenancy agreement. Once your tenancy comes up, the fixed term comes up, you'd sign another one for a fixed term period, or you'd run to a periodic tenancy, which would mean you'd get a month to month notice. So sometimes that just benefits both parties, that it's just rolling through rather than signing new terms and conditions. What's going to change is it's going to be effectively a periodic tenancy from the start. So the tenancy will be signed and it'll be 1 month. So it'll be a 1 month tenancy. And then after that, the tenants can give 2 months notice. So that is the way that tenants would give 2 months notice. So technically it could be in there for 3 months as a minimum. And that's what the change is. So there's not going to be any long-term tenancies where tenants sometimes will tie themselves in for longer for their security. Landlords want longer tenancies for their security. That's going to be no longer there. And it's going to be... you sign a contract for 1 month and then you can give 2 months notice at any point from there as the tenant. The landlord cannot give you the notice.
Okay. So we are managing properties for our landlords all across London. We will no longer be allowed to confirm or sign an agreement with a tenant for any sort of fixed term tenancy. How are you going to manage to ensure that the tenant that you're moving in is hopefully going to stay for a minimum period of really 6 months, right? We have a 6 month break clause in there with a lot of our tenants at the moment. How are you going to manage this for our tenants?
So I think that's when the letting agent style. So just to confirm people, there's letting agents who will just let the properties. Now, you know, they're the high street agents and there's independent agents. They'll turn up, do the viewing, and they'll get paid their commission when the tenant moves into the property. What we do, we cover all the bases. So we carry out the viewings ourselves for the client, and then manage the whole process. So sometimes there's two different departments. We do it all so that we can control that. That's now going to require, on your viewing, I think I said previously, I believe, this interview process. It is finding out who these people are. Do they fit the bill? Like, do they fit in? I don't want to say the bill because it's
the rent is right.
But do they fit into the tenancy? Are they going to be a good tenant? Now, that process, you know, you'll do over 20 minutes, half an hour. I think it's going to be a lot more in depth now. There'll be a lot more questions that we want to have answers to. Don't know what they all are exactly yet, but we're going to want a lot more of that information from the tenants about their current tenancy, about the landlord. Originally, I don't really listen to any landlord reference, because anybody can do a reference technically and you can get them out. If you want the tenant out, you'll give them a good reference as a landlord. Mm-hmm. So we'll receive references from landlords, and then the tenant's a bit of a nightmare and you question the landlord's reference. Was it legit, or did they just want them out of their problem, so it's out of their property, so it's our problem, not their problem? Now, I'm probably going to take more time in trying to speak to the actual landlord and actually sort of question them a bit more about the person that's leaving.
That's interesting.
That's just because in the past, never looked at it, but I think that way I'll be able to get more of an opinion and gauge on the tenant in hand, the maintenance issues, the questions, because it's a lot more, there's a lot more risk for the owners for that. So you need as the agent and landlord, you need to spend more time working out who's going to be in that property, because you want them long term. But tenants also want long term. I looked, and I think lots of people have said that it happens in Scotland, a similar.
Yeah, so process. they have similar rules set up in Scotland where tenants can leave early, and you've seen a really low uptake of any tenant that leaves early because moving is very expensive. It's a massive inconvenience for anyone to move house.
Sorry, I had a look online, and it's an average, I think it's £2,000 on top moving costs in London.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
I think it's slightly less outside London, but it's roughly £2,000, because that's got your cleaning costs from moving out, of your property.
Yeah.
And then the moving costs, and then you've still got your deposits to put on top. So if you imagine, if you're 5 weeks deposits in another property and you leave after 3 months, it's that you need that another 5 weeks deposit, because you haven't got that back until you left the other property. So that's always the case when you're moving. So I think there won't be a huge uptake, but at the same time, you know, it works, because we have occasion where we offer, if tenants are unhappy in a property, generally I don't want them in the property, not because they're not nice people. I think if they're unhappy because of something that's not right for them in that property, like we have like a very small example right now where somebody has their single glazed windows. We can't change them because it's listed without a lot of hassle and a lot of money to the owner, who can't justify that right now. And they're suffering just because the temperature the last couple of weeks. Now we offered, look, if that's a big deal for you and that's an issue, firstly, you need to look at a higher EPC rating, because that'll just take that out of the equation. Secondly, you're free to give us a month notice and you can leave. Like, we don't want to tie you to a contract, because she's a nice person, or they're a nice person, and we prefer them to be happy. And if we had something else, we'd say, here you go. So I think that comes into it now as well.
Yeah, I think there are instances when a tenant is renting a property where the landlord isn't effectively doing anything wrong. They're not breaking any of the rules in terms of making sure that the standard is up, the property is up to a good enough standard for them to rent, or the tenant isn't necessarily causing massive disruption, or in renter is, but the tenant is just unhappy and the landlord is just unhappy with the situation and expectations aren't aligned and it doesn't work out. And luckily we have sort of the flexibility and the reasoning to go, yeah, this just isn't really working. Would you like to leave? And sometimes they say, no, okay. And maybe we'll, you know, we'll always try and do something to help resolve the problem. But, you know, we'll come to an agreement and they'll move out if they need to. And we'll give them enough notice and they'll give us enough notice and everybody can effectively be respectful of the situation and move on. But yeah, I think the majority of the time, tenants really don't want to leave often. There aren't that many situations where people want a really flexible agreement. Maybe they're looking to buy somewhere or something like that. But, you know, these rules aren't really being brought in for those people. But it will benefit some people in some ways. That's great. But I don't think this will have a massive impact and isn't something we should be particularly concerned about.
No, I think the one thing that I didn't mention is on the viewing process. So when tenants view properties, I've just said it, it for me, it's like an interview. As much as it's just getting to know them, them getting to know us, and working out how it works. We explain how we work, how we're a managing agent for the owner. Most of the time, they'll never hear from the owner or see the owners, and that everything comes through us, and we act effectively as the owner to them. As much as, you know, a high street agent, managing agent company, you speak to one person, and 2 months later, it's switched to another property manager, to 3 months later, it's another person. It will be fairly consistent with us, and I'll always be available as well as our team. On the viewing process, I think because of these rules, the one thing that probably gets most tenants when they move in is they're expecting a different property than what they saw.
Mm-hmm.
In sense of there'll be certain things that they're expecting to be done, and it depends on the property and the time frame. Sometimes you have 24 hours just to flip a property from one to the other. So there's certain things we can't do in that time frame. But there's also certain things that they expect to be done, or things that we don't know about because the tenants have not told us until we get there, that lights are not working or silicon seal needs to be, they expect it to be redone. Now, you won't do a silicon seal around the bath every time,
mm-hmm.
but obviously when it gets a condition, a couple of years, you usually have to just redo it. I think what's going to happen is on that offer form, however everyone does it, there's going to be a lot more points on there. There's going to be a lot more detail of this is what you're getting in return for this offer, or this is what we're expecting in return for this offer. So it's going to be a lot more detailed, right? So that everybody has it, everyone covers themselves. So the landlord can say, well, we said we weren't going to paint the property, or we were going to paint the property, or the tenant's expected to be painted, then, and the offer is X amount for the property painted, da, da, da. If the owner doesn't paint it, then that they're not obliging to the offer. I think there's going to be a lot more details from people on that, and there'll be a lot more negotiation back and forward.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point actually, because that is one of the challenges along the tenancy process that we come across, is a tenant moves into a property and something, they're unhappy about something, but it had never been raised, it had never been discussed. And you're right, I think from your perspective in terms of effectively managing that from the get-go, giving a really clear sort of offer letter to tenants where they can fill out as much information as they can, and we give them all the options or as much options as possible to really try and encourage them to think about where they're moving into and what they like about it, what they don't like about it, and to openly discuss that with us, and we can then action those problems, so when they move in they're happier, and that reduces the risk of them leaving. And it also can help bring up the standard of properties as well, which is a very good thing for tenants. And I do think
the landlords.
Yeah, and the landlords, exactly. Exactly. Because of course the better quality your property is in, the higher rent you can charge. So there's also
depending on the rules,
of course. So there's a whole cycle that's involved in that, which I do think that would be beneficial.
Yeah, I think the detail, but that's where it's gonna come in with, and that, like the example I used with the single glazed windows. Now, some people listen to this and say, oh, you just get double glazing in them. Listed building consent doesn't allow double glazing without getting the permission. And to get the permission, the windows would then have to be, the whole building would have to be done. I don't want to bore people with that, but in certain boroughs in London, it is just impossible unless everybody's doing them at the same time, because they need to be matching, because it has to be in keeping. So some of the windows in certain properties around South Kensington are rather large, and they do let in a lot of, or they let out a lot of the heat, sorry, and let in a lot of the cold.
Mm.
But that's just something that, you know, we're normally wouldn't have a conversation with people about. It would just be, for, you know, it's a given that, you know, it's not going to be, if they ask a question about single glazed windows, done. If it's not, then we're going to probably just make sure that we highlight, you know, the possible issues with these things. So if it is going to be, you know, that's that room, they are single glazed, just so you're aware. So that's covered. So they can never bring that up, and not in a negative way. It's just that can never be brought up as against us for not telling them or them not being aware. That's going to be there, because that's not going to change. So there's certain things that we're going to highlight, I think, more as the agent or agents, landlords, just to make sure that everybody is, we can prove that we have spoken to them about this.
Excellent. Okay. So I think we should talk about the removal of Section 21. Do you want to just give a very quick overview as to what Section 21 is?
Section 21, the very quick overview, is no-fault eviction. So a landlord can evict a tenant without any reason by giving them the notice. There's generally a reason behind it, but you don't have to tell the tenant what that issue is. Do we want to talk about how it currently works and the actual process? For some people that maybe have never come across it, as in the time frames we're looking at this current day and age, just for a quick...
Yeah, give a quick overview. It's just the reality of how it's currently working.
The reality currently works is, and I'm speaking, I've in 12 plus years, I've maybe done 5 Section 21s that go through this process. And at the moment, we've got one currently going on. And I'll give an example just because we had it confirmed by solicitors the other day. Section 21's been given. The tenants haven't left. So we now have to go for the eviction part of that. Now, the notice is given and there's a time frame. Then you have to go to the courts to get the proceedings to go through. That's on average 2 to 4 months, I think they said it was. Once that happens, the tenant's going to leave. And then it goes to, if the tenants do not leave, it then goes to bailiffs. And the bailiffs, big scary men, it's another 20 weeks from the time they get the documents before eviction happens. So you're looking at, I think by the time it finishes, eight plus months for an eviction to go through from the point. So it's slightly more than 8 months from the start to finish. We know stories of people that are coming up to a year in that situation. Now, that's just the process that the courts need to sort out for this to come through. Currently, no fault eviction, a landlord can give notice to get the property back. End of, no reason, that's the way. The reality, it takes a lot longer than just giving the notice and they move out 2 months later. What's going to happen is that it's getting abolished. So landlords will not be entitled to just give no, will not be entitled to not have a reason for evicting a tenant. Now, the reasons generally, if they were in rent arrears, so there's other notices, which we're not going to go into all the technicalities because it's just, it overcomplicates it. But normally there'll be, you know, you'll give notice for different reasons of breaching contracts, rent arrears. Have you got some of them there?
I think in terms of what's going to be coming in, which will effectively be under Section 8, but even under that, there's different section and different grounds. Is rent arrears, which will be if someone's in 3 months rent arrears, it originally was 2 months, you'll be able to go for eviction. Any kind of antisocial behavior, and that's kind of split into two different types of behavior. One which is very serious, which is criminal, and the other is more being a nuisance. And of course, you'll have to have evidence to be able to prove both of those grounds for eviction. If the landlord wants to sell their property, but the tenant will have to have been in the property for at least 12 months for them to be able to do that. And again, that's 4 months notice. If the landlord wants to move into a property or a member of their family, but it has to be quite a close, not an extended member of their family. So it can be, I think it can be a sibling, or it can be a daughter or a son. I don't think it can be a cousin. I do think it can be a stepson. Again, that detail is all going to come in. Those are generally the reasons. So a landlord will still be able to evict for basically all the same reasons that they would evict today. It's just effectively done under Section 8, and reasons will have to be given. And if the tenant agrees with those reasons and leaves, then the tenant will leave the property and the landlord can do whatever they need to do with the property. If they don't, it will have to go to the court and the judge will have to decide whether the landlord really is wanting to sell their property, for example. And all the landlord needs to do is have to spoken to an agent or listed the property. Again, that is to be confirmed, but something along those lines. So there's just a slightly more stringent process in having to prove why you're wanting to evict someone. However, from a landlord perspective, the ability is still there to do it. What will vary is how long it will take and if the tenant is willing to leave as per their notice. Immediately. If they do, that's fantastic. If they don't and you have to go through the court process, I think that's what the challenge is that we're going to see coming in. So I think what Rory would be great to do is to kind of have a look at how are we going to manage this moving forwards? And I think it sort of comes down to a few key points, which is around like interviewing tenants, as you've already discussed, looking at the inventory and the property condition, again, which we've already discussed.
I think these two first points, I think they link together.
Absolutely.
So I think it's creating got more detailed work to get people into a property and make sure they're the correct fit, and that will hopefully reduce the need for ever using the Section 21. And as I said, I've done five in 12 plus years, and that's some of them are, you know, we'll have left at the end of that process. Normally it's mutual discussions, but I know lots of companies and landlords that have had worse experiences, and they need to process these things through. So I think there's gonna be that fine line. But yeah, I think the ones I was discussing before covers these points for the Section 21. It's making sure the tenants are correct, making sure that those communication channels are open so that they don't get into rent arrears. They don't get, if they're antisocial behavior, you know, that sometimes depending on what the reason is, you need to just have those open channels of communication. And that's where the landlord has to have good communication with an agent, if they're self-managed with the tenants.
Yeah.
It's there for that to be sort of taken advantage of, is making sure that people are communicating with each other.
I think that's a really important point, because I hear in the office quite a few times you on the phone or you or Juan trying to get hold of someone who may be slightly delayed in their rent, or there is a complaint coming in from someone in the building or an issue or a disagreement. And sometimes it can take you a while to get hold of that tenant, whether that tenant is nervous to speak to you or unsure to speak to you or trying to avoid the situation or is busy or is going through something themselves. A lot of the time I hear eventually when you do get to speak to them, you're just really personal and you try to say, look, tell me what's going on. I need you to just be honest with me so we can work out a plan and we can try and find a solution. And I think it takes a lot of maturity and professionalism and experience on your side to be able to navigate those real people problems that happen in the market today and that tenants genuinely do experience. It really is very rare, and it certainly has been in our experience, that a tenant is just a bad tenant. They don't pay their rent and they leave. It's probably maybe happened once, maybe twice. But it really is about working with your tenants to have that open line of communication, build their trust for them to be able to say, I'm struggling because of X, Y, Z, or I did this and this person intimidated me, or I didn't mean to do it, or I did it once, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. And I think that's a really important part of working with tenants today to make sure that...
Yeah, it's also just making sure problems. You don't, you know, that if a complaint comes in from someone for antisocial behavior, for example, a complaint comes in from somebody against your flat, you know, we may manage the building and that's easier to communicate because then we know what's happening with everybody, but we may just manage one flat in that building. That is something that we then will look at, but I'll always ask our tenant for their side of it, because it's always good to put examples to this. We got a complaint about one of our tenants smoking in their flat from an owner. So an owner occupier lived in a flat and we had our tenant in the flat below them, and we got complaints that they were smoking out of the window. So you're not allowed to smoke in the building, so smoking out the window is in the building. Smoke was coming back in and they could smell it upstairs in their flat. Our tenant denied this, and the owner above was complaining. And long story short, we asked our tenant, if you are doing it, because we do know they smoked, if you are doing it, please just don't do it for 2 weeks. If you are doing it, just stop for 2 weeks. And if a complaint comes in that 2 weeks time, we know it's not you. We had an open, honest conversation. They promised us they wouldn't do it. They would go out the front of the building and smoke out there. In those 2 weeks, or a couple of days into it, we got a complaint. Our tenant wasn't even there. Away. So we knew it wasn't our tenant. And what we've learned since is it was actually a tenant in another building next door that was going. But our tenant was getting it, because the rules in the building are very strict about smoking in our building, but the building next door have a different rule. But the owner was, you know, telling our tenant we had to get our tenant out. They can't do this. This is unacceptable. The health and safety, the fire risk, etc. Mm-hmm. Our tenant wasn't doing it, they said. Now, they may have at some point, I don't know, but they weren't doing it. And we had an open, honest conversation with our tenant, and issue's gone. It's been resolved.
Good plan. That was but a good plan.
Because we also, I also know it's always he said, she said. Let's get the evidence and work out. If it's a consistent issue, then we know. If a new tenants move in and the flat is still complaining, you know, we've had that many times where people will complain and then we change tenants and they continue to complain about the same issues. And we're like, well, it's a different tenant now. So you're telling me the exact same tenant's the exact same issue of, you know, whatever it was. But these are the things that we're, you know, going to, that we have to, you're going to have to sort of manage again. And that's where, as an owner, with all these rules, regulations, you may not want to manage them anymore. And that's where, you know, someone like ourselves can come in.
Do you want to briefly mention about rent protection as a way of managing? Because, you know, now it will be 3 months rent arrears as opposed to two, plus the courts will take, you know, quite a long time. There is a higher risk in the no reason evictions, I like calling it, as opposed to no fault eviction. Evictions. Yeah. I think it's something that probably does need to be mentioned.
Yeah, so I think there's going to be more of an uptake on rent guarantee insurance from companies for that, just because of the scale and the time frame, and you know how it seems in the press that this is going to play out. Rent guarantee is going to probably be something that we'll start looking at offering clients more. Currently, most of our clients won't have it, but most of our clients are long-standing and had properties for years. We have one particular client who's foreseen this happening. He has gone through this before in 1986. He predicted this to us. This was going to happen before the bill came in. You know, he's happy not to have the rent guarantee personally right now, but we may look at the process with him, because he said it'll, you know, it'll run its course and it'll go through the process and then it'll change again. The time frame, we don't know when that's going to be, but a lot of our clients will look at it, especially some of them who and the clients or potential clients or people we speak to who generally property in London are asset rich, and I would say relative cash poor, because they're still probably going to have cash available and they have a property somewhere else and they live somewhere else. But because of the cost of the service charges these days, the cost of the properties, that, you know, they rely on this money to pay for that property. So with that increase, we will probably, for some of them, or if not all of them, be looking at the options and saying, here's the rent guarantee options that's going to cost you X amount more, just to take that burden and that stress off of you, so that we can look after your property to the best needs. Where in the past, I've never really offered it, because I don't think it'd been really required, and generally our rent arrears is low for properties. So I think that's just something that we are going to have to look at in a bit more detail. And I've already seen more adverts and emails coming in with options on this and different offerings. So we'll probably be addressing them once we know the exact dates and what's going to be happening with the bill.
Okay. I think that covers sort of grounds for possession quite nicely. How about we have a chat about rents? This is effectively the rent control section of the rights bill that's come in. Let's talk a bit about how we currently market a property, what our experience is with it specifically, and on renewals, how that currently works. Nice and short and sharp and to the point, this bit, because the next bit is how to manage it. That's the more interesting bit.
So you want current, how we
current, so yeah.
So what, valuing a property?
Yep. Yeah, how putting a market onto rent.
Okay, so putting
property onto rent. Property onto rent.
So we currently, I'd say we do it slightly different to a high street. High street, generally speaking, we'll put it on at the highest price initially, so that win the listing from the landlords, and then the price may drop into the right market. We'll always price ours according to the right move drop down menu, generally.
What's the right move drop down menu?
What's those things called, those menus?
What the...
Everybody knows about that.
I don't know what you mean.
Pricing. So like the price per month rental.
Okay. Just looking at each other like, okay. I don't know what you're talking about. Just for someone that doesn't speak the lingo.
Generally, if everybody looks on generally on Rightmove and Zoopla for property. So you'll go on there, number of bedrooms, depending on what the bedrooms are, and your price per month you're willing to pay. Now that will go down on there. There'll be different options. So £1,000, £1,250, £1,500, £1,750, £2,500 maybe, and so on and so forth. And it changes. So it gets bigger. So it's 3,000, 4,000, or 3,500, then 4,000, then it's £1,000 gap. We will normally try and price it according to that because the closer you are to that. So if it's a £2,000 property, people with £2,000, you'll sit higher up on the search. If you're 1,850, you're going to sit further down after being a new property. So we'll always price it according to that, where some people might go for the next one up, so 2,250, and you get no inquiries. If you get no inquiries, then you're probably overpriced, generally. If it's the right price, you'll get a number of viewings. If you get the number of viewings, you'll get an offer, and if you get the offer, you get a let. That's generally the process. We'll always price it accordingly to that. Now, occasionally, it might sit in that gap between two. So depending on the time of year in the market, we may put it on at the currently, we'd have put it on at £2,000. So we expect people to pay £2,000. You might get someone to come in. You occasionally get someone that comes in and pays £2,100 for it because they really want it, right location for them, and that's over price, over the asking price, which looks great if you were going to market it that way. But it just, you know, that's reflecting the market and the competition, which is fairly high in London. What's going to happen is you're not allowed to have bidding wars effectively to overprice property. So whatever you put it on at...
Can I just interrupt you super quickly? So when you put a property onto market, say it's a £2,500 property and you get five or six inquiries for it over time, how do you manage that? So what's that process there that happens?
So you'll arrange viewings for all of them. Mm-hmm. They'll turn up, they'll do a viewing. Normally we'll try and book them in a window. So the same sort of, as in a window. So like within a 2 hour window, they're trying to get as many in at that time just for turning up to the property, speaking to everybody, having all the details ready. They'll normally go away and put an offer in. So you might get one or two people putting an offer in. Now, say two of them really want it and they both put £2,500, okay? Going on to all the other changes and rules coming in, just to connect them up, someone may offer 12 months. Somebody offer 24 months. Somebody offer 24 months with a 12-month break clause. Some may offer 12 months with a 6-month break clause. Now, the 24 months with a 12-month break clause is obviously a long-term tenant and potentially better for the landlord for security. Other ones, it depends on the situation. So that'll be part of the offer. But then if they're the same price and they go through and just imagine the exact same criteria, they sort of tick the same boxes. Say it's a couple, both working professionals, just trying to be straightforward. No one asking for anything that's, you know, unfurnished, furnished. No one's asking for any details in particular. But they're both £2,500. We would normally go to them and say, look, we've got two offers exact same. The owner has just said, look, can everybody just give me your best change? So someone, the 12-month with a 6-month break clause, for example, may just do a 12-month straight because that's the same as a 24-month with a 12-month break clause, whatever it is. But currently people will go, okay, well, I'll pay 2,600 or 2,550 for it, or 2,510. Like, someone will go £10 over. That's not going to be allowed anymore. So there's not any bidding. It's whatever price you put it on at, you can't go above that. Now, what's going to happen is, or what I suspect will happen, is rents are just going to increase to that point. And people like ourselves who try and get the viewings in, because that's how we will get the people in quickly, because the void period is what we try and avoid for our clients, we will now have to be... We'll have to just strategize how to price it to make sure that we're not undervaluing it, and then you don't want to overvalue it just because you're not going to get the viewings in there. But that will also come in with potential next part with the rent cap.
Yeah.
Depending on how much you... Depending on, which is nothing. We don't... At this point, we have no idea what that's going to exactly transpire as. But we that will potentially affect all of this.
Yeah, I think at this point, there's quite a lot of detail is missing. I think, unfortunately, as you said, it's likely this is going to increase rent actually for tenants, because landlords are going to be nervous of missing out on an extra 10, 20, 50, 100, £200 a month in rent that they could have got, especially, and it really is also especially in areas around schools, which are very, very competitive. And or even just in central London, there's just not a huge amount of stock. You know, we were just looking at Chiswick for a rental for a client of ours, and there is just not a lot of stock. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if rent increases happen. I think it's probably highly likely. And I think as, you know, as a managing agent or a letting agent, you have to ensure that you're not letting a property for less than it could be. But obviously there's going to be market rate and there's always going to be comparisons. And at the same time, you can't overprice a property by £500 a month. It just won't go. So I think it will be somewhat, you know, there's still a level of what tenants are and are not willing to pay for a property.
But at the same time, you're probably going to, so certain prices with certain clients or certain landlords, you're going to potentially price yourself competitively the other way as well, depending on what the caps are and how that's going to work for renewals. If you're sitting in between the two, I'm just thinking, speaking out loud.
Go for it. It's what we're here to do.
If it's something that's 2,500 and you're potentially going to try 2,750, I think that's the next bracket. Some landlords and owners and agents would say, well, let's just put on 2,500 and get 15 people in to see this one. Because you get people that are going to pay that higher amount and you get the people that are on that 2,500 bracket because you're actually looking for that long-term tenant.
Yeah.
If you find somebody that you use the example of a school, if you find somebody next to a school and it's a couple with a child that's at the school that's got another 3 years at that school, highly, highly unlikely that they are going to move in that time. So they'll move into the property. You're probably going to got them for 3 years before the high school comes in or whatever. So that's where in the situation. So if you're pricing it accordingly that way, you'll get more volume of people, which means that you can do what we talked about of processing it better.
Yeah, so you're saying
so rather than just going for the highest and getting five viewings, you might get slightly lower and get 20 viewings. That means you've got 20 people to effectively interview to.
So you're effectively going to be prioritizing quality of tenant, having a number of tenants to sort of effectively vet and be able to pick the best tenant who's most likely going to be paying rent on time, look after the property well, likely to be in there for a long time. And actually landlords will be prioritizing that by still marketing the property at market rent and then allowing them to have that choice, as opposed to, oh wow, I don't want to miss out on £50 or £100 or £250, and actually having fewer tenants to choose from. And actually, because of the risks that you're facing now as a landlord, you're going to prioritize that, which I think is a really smart move.
Yeah, potentially. I also think that tenants, and if there's any tenants listening, if this comes in or when it comes in, the details, they're going to turn up, I'm guessing, some of them, the ones that are planned, organized, they're going to turn up with a lot of information for you or have it already on email. Like, here's where I lived. Here's my contract.
The tenant pitch.
But they're going to pitch the thing. And then your job is to read that pitch. And that's the difference between a managing agent and a letting agent. A letting agent will, you know, the nicest way, they want their commission. Now, that's a whole other discussion, which we have no idea about how that's going to work. Because technically, tenant could be in for 3 months and you pay 12. There's no 12 months. You normally pay a fee up front, but that's not for us to discuss. But that's where I think, you know, for us, the advantage is that's where I'm going to be paying a lot of attention. And Juan, who does a lot of viewings with me or for me as well, we're going to be paying attention of who these people are and the tenants. If they're providing all the information, is that because they're good and they're organized tenants, or are they trying to play the system? Mm-hmm. In London, the competitive market, people are going to be making sure they have everything sent to you beforehand, all the details, all the information, and it's going to be a bit more admin on that side. But on the other side of that, the admin, which is a bit we're going into, is renewals. I think that was the next part. Normally you do a 12-month renewal. That's not going to be the case anymore. So there's going to be potential rent increases allowed.
Yeah, so you can only increase the rent after the tenant's been there for 12 months. You're not allowed to have anything in the contract that says, for example, every year you will have a 4% increase or whatever that is.
Is that from yesterday?
Is that from yesterday? No. This is what's been discussed prior to that. And effectively, you have to give the tenant 2 months' notice before a renewal. And if the tenant
does... What notice is that?
The notice, I believe, is section 13.
Okay. Yeah, you're great.
And,
Just testing your notices.
Section 13, thank you. So that's a section 13. And if the tenant... And it has to be at market rate. So you can't increase it by 10 or 15% as a landlord or property manager, which an ombudsman will be advising on. We don't know the detail of how that will be looked at all.
We don't know what that is at the moment. There'll be, as we've called it, a cap on that.
We don't know at this point.
The discussions are there's going to be a cap on it.
Yeah.
So you won't be able to increase by X amount or the way of pricing.
And if the tenant doesn't agree with the increase and think it's unfair or unreasonable, they can take you to a tribunal where you have to explain why, etc., etc. And I also don't believe, please correct me if I'm wrong, or at least it may well change, that if after, say, the tenant gets their section 13 and they want to have, the landlord wants their rent to increase after 12 months, if it then takes 3, 4, 5 months under the tribunal to get that sorted, I don't believe it's backdated. So that is quite a challenge, I think, for
the tribunal
landlords.
Costs money, no?
No, it's free for the tenant. It is free for the tenant to do that. So I think this is where landlords are also probably most concerned at this point. So how do you think, what would be important as a property manager or a landlord at this point in terms of managing that, looking at automation, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I think once we know what the rules are on the cap or the increase, if there's a percentage each year it can go up and it can't go up more than that, what you're going to find is generally it's just going to be a section 13 notice is going to go out. So normally what would happen, well, the way we process, the process we have currently is 3 months before tenancy ends, we'll ask them if the tenant wants to renew, and then we give them, we've got a time frame for discussions and them making their plans, etc., etc., and potential rent increases. What we think we're probably going to, we'll look into doing is if there's a rule on how much it can increase, and as long as that's within the, you're able to increase it to a couple of percent or a fixed price or whatever, that'll just become automatic that we'll be sending out the section 13 notice that your rent is increasing to 3%. That will take out, you know, that's, it's not the renewal process anymore. So you'd argue that we have, there's less admin for us to do initially, because you could just, it just rolls through and it could be the same price. But that's currently the same as they got set up now. If we don't change it, it's just a renewal. So we it's just moved to periodic tenancy. I think we'll just automate the section 13 notice as part of that process, making sure that we send that in advance. And once again, it's about being reasonable. Whatever cap comes in or whatever rules come in, it's working them again to make sure, because you don't want the tenant, if they're a good tenant, you don't want them to leave. We have some landlords that will never, they'll do very small increases just to keep it within their costs, but they want to keep the tenant in there. Hence why we have tenants that have been there for 12 plus years. We have tenants that have, you know, majority of our tenants will stay 3-4 years in their properties. So it's just making sure you can control that and that side of the admin.
Okay. Brilliant. I think that covers those key points. I think as a bit of a summary, I think if you're a landlord and you were listening to this and you're like, okay, overall...
Mind blown,
exactly. Oh my goodness. I think you really need to start be thinking about this now and questioning what your current setup is. And I think if you're a landlord who's working with a property manager, I think it's worth asking your property manager quite a few questions.
I think the one thing is the... It's just because reviewing situation, because if you're working with a letting agent, so just make the difference between the two. If you're working currently and you manage a property and you work with a letting agent, it's how are they going to manage that process for you? How are they going to conduct their viewings for you? Because no longer it's just getting your commission as the agent. That's still important, but because if that tenant moves in, and yes, what would currently happen is a well-known high street agent in London who may or may not have driven around small little cars for a while, their contracts are very good and they're controlled for 12 months. So there's very little get out for anybody. that's going to come out of the question now. So they've got their fees as an agent, or the high street agents have got, or generally high street agents have got their fees for 12 months of that tenancy. However, that's not going to be the case anymore, or there's going to be some payment back if they leave and tenants can get out easily. You know, there's going to be a bit more movement on that. So actually, as a landlord, you want to make sure that your agent of choice, be it an independent, a high street, whoever it is, they are looking after your needs on that viewing, not their commission, your needs and requirements.
It's a long-term game now. It's not just a short-term let.
I'm taking your commission and I'll see you again in 12 months time and take another commission from you.
Because that letting pro, when you meet someone at a viewing, that is actually probably one of the most important parts of knowing whether you're picking the right person, right tenant for that property, right? So the letting agent is also that person's priority may well be to get the commission. But even though there may be a compliance department, there might be a renewal department, there might be a department that will analyze the market rent, which is what a lot of the big agents are marketing. The real question is, who is meeting that tenant and how are you vetting whether that tenant is going to be the best person for that property? Yes, you want to get the right rent. Absolutely. It's unlikely that a property is rented for less than it should have been rented for these days, generally in London, just because of the prices anyway. So asking your letting agent or your property manager, you know, how do you audit tenants before they move in? Who prices the properties and how do they do it? How are difficult tenants managed? You know, what advice are you giving for landlords at the moment? You know, really organize a meeting, have a conversation, sit face to face or even over the phone if you need to, and ask them about how they are going to be managing this. And if you're not confident with their response and you don't feel that there are actionable changes that's going to be happening in the day-to-day operations, see if you can find someone else and speak to lots of different agents. Get an idea of what lots of different agents are going to be doing to be managing this, because you've got to look at that source, because you're paying someone to do that job, to look after your asset for you, and you need to be confident that agent or the manager or whoever it is going to do that for you. And if you're not, of course, as we've discussed already, the other part of this as a summary is being selective with your tenants. We've gone over that. That's sort of a no-brainer, even now, before the bills come in. The other part as a landlord that you need to consider moving forward is about investing in your property. You know, and this is where the bill is, you know, making sure that properties are a good enough standard to be rented. And if you want to keep tenants happy, landlords do need to be putting some money, a little bit more money potentially, into their properties to ensure that you're not having any back and forth with tenants or tenants aren't unhappy or frustrated. And then, of course, as Rory mentioned, as a final point, is the rent protection scheme to consider if you want to have a little bit, if you want to sleep possibly a little bit better at night, knowing if you've got a tenant that's starting to get into rent arrears, who knows what can happen in the market. Anything can happen to anyone, really. And if you want to have that confidence, that's probably something that's worth considering. And then, of course, finally, it's like knowing the rules. I think it's like really investing a little bit more time and understanding how you can get a better return out of your investment these days. There's so many resources online. We also offer consultancies and conversations. So if anyone wants to have a conversation about their investment and how they think you can get a little bit more profit out of it, whilst of course maintaining to all regulations and looking after tenants and whatever responsibility you have as a landlord, I think that's really important today. Have you got anything else that you'd like to
No, I think add? You've I think you've covered I think we've covered everything. As I said, if there is something that you're unsure about or just a question, there's many ways to get in contact with us. Drop us an email, give us a call, WhatsApp. We'll happily answer questions for people. Just why this is all coming in, it's going to be in the forefront of the news. We'll probably do another podcast in it on another date, when we've got more official information, and we'll maybe debate a bit more about everyone's choice of how they're going to handle it. But yeah, thanks for listening.
Thanks so much, everybody. Bye.